there are models and frameworks being made and proposed by academics presented at conferences. Oh, this would be great. This would be the way to solve it. And then it's 20 years later and the industry is like, oh yeah, by the way, should really do this.
Our voice synthesis technologies nowadays are still not good enough, both technically and also artistically. So technically, there's still this latency problem. So if you want to swap the voice, or you want to convert voice, you want to augment the voice, it's always a bit of a delay. And in live performance, we have no tolerance for any sort of delay.
They used her voice model to actually sing it, and now she has her song actually sung in 5 languages and all through her own voice model, which also, you know, just opens new horizons.
So, welcome everybody. My name is Tobias Wilinski. I started in the music industry as head of Genius Germany, and now I'm doing a music business podcast. Maybe you saw the tiny roll-up I put in front of the building, so you can scan the QR code and follow the podcast. Also, listen to this talk again. And now I would like you to introduce yourself, Dr. Gemini Rhyme.
Hello, my name is Gemini Rhyme. I'm a professor of electronic and produced music at the Guildhall School of Music and Drama in London. Originally, I'm from France, so if you hear that in my accent, that's why. Aside from the research work I'm doing in academia, I'm also a musician. I write music and I make music. I'm a musician, singer and a bassist, primarily in the kind of jazz adjacent world. I focus my research on new technologies for audio production. By this, I mean I have 2 main streams of interest. The first one is immersive and interactive sound. I think on screen right now, there is an example of recent work that I've done, composing a piece for an orchestra recorded in Atmos and then making a visual representation of that to kind of be played in like a surround room. I'm specifically interested in the kind of application of those new technologies for cultural heritage projects, social good interests, etc. And then the other side of what I do is about responsible AI in music. I come from a music computing and psychology lab up in the University of York. That's where I did my PhD. I did this research on AI-driven audio production in partnership with the BBC. And from then on, I kind of figured that I had this, this interest for creator-centric AI research, looking at how we can make AI, if we can make AI music work for musicians, always thinking of the musician first. And that means involving lots of techniques that if you do any kind of like software development, you might be familiar with, anything from user-centered design to participatory design and co-creation, always putting the user, the musician, first in the research. I think the reason that I'm here today on this panel is because a couple of years ago I trained a sample RNN model, a recursive neural network, on my own voice to create a double to use it on a couple of productions, including one that actually was the AI Song Contest in 2022. It's called Nobody Knew. If you want to listen to it, the other one that you can hear those vocal samples in is called Call Me. It's also online. But generally, yeah, I've tried to not only research but also put into practice the things that I've been learning. So yeah, I'm here wearing my researcher practitioner hat. Hopefully, that's an interesting contribution to the conversation.
Sure. And now, Dr. Alexandra Huang Kukina, you have an opera where you used AI for, and have a presentation also.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me here. So my name is Alexandra Huang Kukina, and my daytime job is an academic. So I currently work at the University of Edinburgh and also Lund University in Sweden, and also about to start a new position at the University of Manchester as a music fellow. So from my academic research, I've been very interested in this question of how can I make opera, which is a traditionally very elitist art form, how can I make opera more accessible to diverse modern audiences without really dumbing it down? So I've been starting doing a lot of research for this, and then also recently I founded the new organization called Operative Arts, which is about using cutting-edge technology to enhance opera accessibility. So hence, you can see from this slide, this is a new interactive Japanese science fiction opera, which is an opera about AI, and also some of the staging and the production are facilitated by cutting-edge AI technologies. And even though I'm being placed in this panel about voice cloning, I would say in the opera community in general, people are really really resistant and skeptical about voice cloning. And as a producer, I always make it very clear in any sort of contractual agreement that I make with opera singers that their voice will not be cloned, and rather AI is just an additional layer to do things like tone morphing, to add a kind of avant-garde sound effect to the opera itself to make it more immersive. So yeah, I will just stop here. I can talk more just in a second.
And then Osrin Skarnulite, you are CEO of VoiceSwap, and maybe introduce yourself, and you also have a video.
Yes, well, first of all, well done on pronunciating my surname. That's the first
Practiced.
Time. Yes, that's the first time probably like in the weeks I heard someone actually saying it right. So, hi, my name is Osrin. I'm the CEO of VoiceSwap. We specialize in AI voice cloning technology and also finding areas how to apply it in the music production. We work directly with singers, we work with the voiceover talent, and we work directly with rights holders. We run a DTC SaaS platform where anyone can access AI voice models for voice-to-voice conversion of professional singers. And those voice models will not be and probably will never be anonymous female lo-fi one or jazz type of model, because we directly associate them with credited singers like Liam Bailey, Ruth Royal, who worked with such names as Rolling Stones, Chase and Status, and so on. So you actually are working then directly with the accredited artists, and also each use of the AI voice model generates new revenue stream for them, because we split all the revenue generated from the use of voice models 50-50 with the underlying artists. Very proudly, we already issued 4 royalty statements, which actually proves that AI can be used in a way that actually generates new economies and it creates new rights. We're also very passionate about talking of this new intellectual property being voice and voice models, essentially, where it's applied, how it can be copyrightable maybe in the future, and what protections are there. We do embed ourselves quite deeply in the policy matters. And I'll stop talking right now because I had one beer too many yesterday, and I'm actually, funnily enough, losing my voice myself. And I'll just ask to play a little video.
VoiceSwap is a revolutionary new way for singers and producers to work with vocals. Access our roster of singers directly from your DAW and try out new voices quickly and easily. Each time you swap a voice, the original singer gets paid a royalty. Use VoiceSwap's plugin to create new harmonies from a single recording. You could try out ideas in other voices, stack and layer vocals, try out new backing vocalists, or even just create realistic double tracks quickly and easily from wherever you are. You can even create an AI model of your own voice and share it safely and securely with your bandmates, co-producers, collaborators, or maybe even your fans. It's up to you where it goes. Collaborators can continue to work in your voice to finish demos or ideas, and once the project's finished, you can revoke access to your voice, which gives you complete control. With VoiceSwap, you can access and work with your voice anywhere, at any time. VoiceSwap. Find your voice.
And just a very quick comment. Yes, that's her real home studio. I get asked a lot of questions whether it's AI-generated background. No, it's actually her studio. And Alex is one of our singers on the platform. She's a singer, songwriter, producer. And actually, when she was filming that, she was 8 months pregnant as well. So,
so you said you're a failed artist. You too are artists. You're doing music. How is AI voice changing the way artists approach songwriting and production, in your opinion?
I think it's, well, first of all, the environment where we're in, it's very noisy. And we have actually two camps, I'd say. We have the singer camp, and then we have the producer camp, and probably producer-songwriter camp. And producers, they naturally, they adapt to new technologies really fast. They want to experiment. They want to use voice models as sample packs, while, you know, artists, because voice in itself is such a huge part of identity that they're very protective about the asset. And this is, to be honest with you, like, when we established and when we started Voice, well, for us it was, okay, how can we actually protect? How can we not, what can we do in a way that it doesn't oversaturate the market with, you know, like more sample-like voice models? Because when you think about an AI voice model, unlike a sample pack, it can actually generate derivatives in perpetuity. So what is the correct price? And also as well, the kind of fears and considerations about for singers is completely different. So how can I be in control of what is being said or sung in my voice? So let's say if I have, I know I'm a stout vegan, and I would never ever want any producer to use my voice in a song about, you know, like a pork chop. How can I protect the use of my voice? And also, how can I trace where my voice goes? So, but We've addressed all of that. We do have a custom pipeline of moderation tools where, you know, like identifiers, hate speech and inappropriate language. And also we do have custom moderation capabilities where, you know, like I could just block out any pork mentioned in that. But what I love as well about it, that suddenly with AI technology, it not only becomes a tool of efficiency, as you saw, AI voice models can be used in pre-production planning, post-production editing, creating harmony layers, creating stacked vocals just from one vocal layer, but also it builds new connections. So let's say, imagine you are up-and-coming artist, and most artists, they have actually now probably profiles on SoundCloud, and SoundCloud is actually a very good ecosystem because it's in the same kind of ecosystem you have singers, songwriters, producers, and then me as a producer, I'm really fascinated by you as a singer, and I would love to work with your voice. And now suddenly, if I can access your voice model, I can do that directly, and I can send you the demo. And then a producer who probably never thought that can actually work with that voice has the capability, and vice versa, the artist also is discovered by a producer, which we had actually multiple examples. We had, actually, it was producers of Pendulum, they used Angie Brown's voice model, and then they actually took Angie Brown to the studio as well. And this is also what we are working towards, just creating this network effect.
Perfect. You told before about the opera singers that are probably not the only singers that are protective of their voice, also podcasters. You worked in a project where podcasters use the voice. I mean, nobody really wants to be abused. Nobody wants to find their own voice on something they wouldn't publish themselves. How is your perspective on that? How is AI, like you said, you didn't really use AI clones as much?
No, not really in the opera project, but as I said already, the opera community, at least as it's the case in the UK, opera singers are really, really against AI. So I said that in all the contracts I made with the performers in my team, I have to make explicit statement that their voice is going to be protected. It's not going to be cloned, and AI is just for audio effects only. But also on that note, I think AI voice, because when we talk about AI voice technologies, there's a synthesized speech and also there's synthesized singing. I think what the opera singers are against is more about synthetic singing rather than synthetic speech. So if I, let's say, I just get a small chunk of their voice and then to put it for like multilingual applications, for instance, in my opera, which is a Japanese opera, but most of the opera singers are they don't really speak the Japanese language. So then I get a little bit of their voice recordings and then use that to sort of into spoken narratives in the Japanese language. And that sort of small scale applications, I think they are pretty happy with. So yeah, there's just something to mention about the multilingual applications, and that also reflects the conversation that I had with her during the break, which is about enabling the singers to express themselves in a different linguistic dimension.
Yeah, and I'll comment a little bit on that, because last year we had actually a privilege to build a voice clone of a world-class soprano, Asmik Grigoryan. And the task was actually to build her voice model and then swap the voice with another singer's performance and the performance in the language that she never sung before and she never spoke. And it was an Armenian, essentially, performance. The challenge that we actually had, it was really fun because it really stretched the capabilities of model training, because just the range of the soprano vocal is so different from pop. And one of the challenges was, well, normally, just to give you a little bit of a glimpse how we actually build voice models, so we would ask for approximately 30 minutes of high quality vocal data. What it means, no reverb, no background noise, all recorded essentially with a high quality mic. We can build voice models from much smaller data sets, and we ask for 30 minutes because when you receive 30 minutes, probably half of it is only usable. Because what is very important, especially in multilingual application, is capturing all of the phenomes that are possible over there. So one of the challenges was the training data, because Asmik Grigoryan, it was in the middle of her season. She was performing Madame Butterfly at the Royal Albert Hall. So she sent us approximately 7 minutes of training data, and then she literally had no time to record anymore. And that's when her team suggested Stem Separating, a recently released album, where, you know, she's the main performer over there, which created two challenges, actually. So first of all, because it is an operatic performance and it was accompanied by a piano, so we had to use like really good stem separation technology to extract the vocal layer, because
I also saw that the stem separation is a good tool to see if something is AI. Because sometimes you cannot really see if it is or not, and if there are if it is hard to separate this.
Yeah, I've heard this as well. I would love to do more research on this because I don't know, like, I haven't seen any academic research on it yet. I don't know if we've seen the same thing, the same video talking about it.
The Velvet Sundown YouTube video, yeah.
But yeah, I've heard this as well. I would love for someone to do research on this so that it's going to be verified. I'm sure that there are plenty of artifacts and like the sound separation not working as efficiently, depending on especially the training material. If it's been trained on MP3s, the quality of the sound, etc., would change the result you have. But yeah, sorry, this is a detour, but that's a really interesting thing. I'd like to know if it's correct.
Yes.
No, and another challenge was actually because, well, she, as the owner of her voice, she gave us the consent essentially to build a voice model, but even though it was her performance on the album, she didn't own the rights for the album. And essentially building a voice model, it is a derivative work, so we had to go to the label and ask for permission to actually to use some of the tracks to actually that as a training data. So it also created this kind of, you know, like discussion around, well, it's my voice and it's used on a track. I was like, well, That's correct, but you don't own master recording rights, and we need, and that is a track that is released on an album and it's released by a label. So that's where, you know, rights come into conversation and ownership of voice.
Back to the question of production, would you use AI clones for your own musical projects, or would you enhance your own voice with that, or does it feel like cheating for you?
Okay. Does it feel like cheating for me? No, but I come at this from a really specific point. I have a PhD in music AI research. I am the exception, not the rule. So the research I've done specifically looks at whether my experience is replicable. I was able to be in situation of comfort because I was able to be in situations of control. I was in charge of the training data I was putting into a model. I was in charge of the implementation. I worked closely with the engineers who were working on that implementation. And I was collaborating on the output or completely in charge of the output. This situation is, I'm not saying it's bar impossible outside of the specifics, like this specific situation, but asking a classical singer, for instance, to not only train to be versed in AI enough to understand the everything that's coming into and out of the artifacts that are created from this kind of experience is wildly different from asking me to do that. So personally, I've used that clone of my voice that I made that model in a couple of productions completely as I was almost like a side instrument, as a way that an electronic musician would add layer and texture to a song. I used it to have like some, it's not a beatboxing layer on this song, but like it's something to that extent, right? It adds arrangement and production interest on the tracks I was working on. This is fine for me because it's, I understand everything that comes in and out and I'm in control of it. My hypothesis is that this is really hard to extend to singers at large who haven't been trained or haven't been explained what exactly is happening in the background. So I'm super glad that you've been like, you've been making efforts to explain and encourage like the singers that you have on board to understand everything that's going on, because I think that's primordial to this happening in like a responsible way.
Absolutely, because, and you know, like asking about and probably AI shaming someone is not a way to go, because, you know, like then, well, is it fair to use autotune in every single track, you know? Does it make you a singer? And there was a time when actually it was challenged. Oh, you know, like you don't need to be able to sing anymore, just look good and perform, and, you know, like we'll autotune everything else essentially. So I don't think that that's the rant. It's about the education of what are the possibilities of technology, and especially that even though voice or writing to voice likeness and image likeness, they're very blurred, but it's being talked more and more. And this is a new intellectual property that will, I'm pretty sure, very soon be recognized as a copyrightable asset. And as an example, I don't know, have you heard of Katie Price? She's a famous, infamous UK glamour model, but one thing that she recently has done, she actually trademarked her AI likeness, her voice, her image. So she actually protected that in that kind of manner, and it shows that this is a new asset class. Because when you think about that, with AI voice technology, for the first time ever, performance can be separated from the timbre. So it can be my performance, but it can be your voice model. And then, so how do we split the royalties? You know? So, and we're talking about that. Well, suddenly, maybe actually there is a way then, if we acknowledge that, because I provide, well, you provide identity because it's your voice that is identifiable essentially on the track. So why not to split the royalty or to create an additional royalty? But I think that also requires collection societies and key stakeholders coming together, and we are talking with them about essentially recognizing this as a new asset class, especially when it's directly linked to particular singers' identity.
What are the most exciting examples of AI voices you've seen so far?
Well, I could talk about some of the early synthesized opera, and in comparison with the sort of AI opera, I mean, there are a few in global music cultures. So the idea of synthesizing somebody's voice in the opera context, this can be traced back to the 1960s, and when the American composer Milton Babbitt make this new operatic work using synthesizer, tape recordings, and these two are deployed to reinstate the singing character's song after in the opera's framework, after her tone is cut out. So this is not an opera composed to replace human opera singers, but rather to explore the dialectical relationships between silencing and technically mediated voice. But obviously, in that time, there's no real like synthesized AI voice. In modern days, there are a few AI opera, and some of the use cases, like in 2023, Maria Callas, she was on tour with Melbourne Symphony Orchestra. And also in 2019 in Japan, there's a famous NHK AI Hibari project, which shows a life-size 3D video installations of famous Japanese art song singer Hibari Misora. Both of these two use cases received a really bad critical backlash. Some of the audiences denounced this execution as filling the concert hall with a moribund atmosphere, or even accused them of profaning the dead singers. So I guess what I mentioned, that this use cases of AI voice in the operatic world, this really talks about the relationships between the voice and also how do you choose to embody the voice as well. Because choose to represent the dead Maria Callas in, let's say, holographic images or 3D video installations, is that the best way to represent the singers? And also that raises another very interesting question about how hyper-realistic do you want them, this voice to sound? Do we want them to sound so indistinguishable from real human singing voice to the extent that it sounds like it's the echoing of the ghost voice of the singer?
Yeah, I'll piggyback off of that, because I think personally my interest lies in that kind of non-human, like it doesn't have to be human to be usable. As an electronic musician, we're always, I mean, I'm sure you guys know, you're always looking for ways to make new sounds. You're always looking for the next thing to make your track sound so warm and analog or whatever you want to do with your tracks. But there is ways that you can not misuse, but use in a way that reappropriates the AI, the models that you're using, into something creative and that's your own. And I'm particularly interested in that because I think that when you have that reappropriation of your output, of that change into like the edge of something that sounds kind of human but not really, you're also completely integrating the process as well and showcasing that like you have control over what's happening. I'm sure there are applications where people might want to seek exact replicas of their voices, but personally, I am most excited about the things that kind of misuse it, break it a little bit, or use it for like making new sounds, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And to be honest with you, we always also encourage everyone, and not only when it comes to AI voice models, but to any technology, just break it, because only when you actually look into the insides of it, you can then maybe rearrange it a little bit in the way that actually works for you. But for me, I think, and the biggest AI promise is collaboration, I think. And one of the most exciting, actually, projects where I genuinely felt, okay, we are part of the music industry, we are not cannibalizing it, was when at the beginning of this year, we actually announced a competition. We launched a competition together with Beatport and Robert Owens, who is a Chicago house legend, essentially opening his AI voice model and encouraging any producers to submit original works using his AI voice model. And I remember to this day, it was 7 a.m. in the morning. I was in my flat in London and I was actually listening to the entries, and they were all so good. And I was just, you know, I was doing my little chair dance, you know, like wiggling my shoulders. I was like, this is it. This is what it means to be part of the music industry. You're listening to the original work. And then suddenly, and Robert Owens himself, he chose the winner. He re-sung the lines. He could release the track, but it was more about, okay, how through AI voice model, a producer can now be exposed to an established artist and how can essentially the fruits of that collaboration can be released. Also, it was just the strike of luck that also the producer was a long a long-time fan of Robert Owens, and essentially he thought, well, I never actually imagined that I'll be able to ever work with his voice and produce. So, yeah.
I also interviewed recently an artist that cloned his voice and used a female voice because he really needed one for the hook, and he just tried something and then he just picked himself as a female voice. That I found really interesting.
I mean, the world is your oyster when it comes down to AI voice technology, especially when you use it in tandem with existing tools, with the plugins with Melodyne. It's very powerful as well, or, you know, like sample packs. Suddenly they can, you know, like you can have a sample that sings or a layer in, you know, multiple of voices, and or multi-language capabilities as well. Another interesting project that we did was, so we worked together with Ruth Royal, who's a UK-based singer. And then when we built her voice model, we then commissioned and we got together with the songwriters from Japan, from China, from Spain, if I remember correctly, and then one of the Arabic countries, I don't remember which one exactly.
A lot of countries.
So essentially what we did, so they wrote a localized version of her song. They used her voice model to actually sing it, and now she has her song actually sung in 5 languages and all through her own voice model, which also, you know, just opens new horizons. And when we are talking about catalog expansion, especially for sync, this is, again, this is a new area.
Talking about revenue streams, what do you see for the future of AI clones? You mentioned different languages. Then, of course, I can reach many, many more people. What do you think about the revenue streams of AI clones for artists?
I think it's in a strange place because I've heard of a couple of cases where, you know, people have made money selling the rights to their voice, not through your company, it was a while ago when it was starting out, and did that for a price that I find ridiculously low because they did not understand everything that was going on to be happening afterwards. Nowadays, I think hopefully there's going to be more teaching and training about what a voice is worth. I hope that we can approach a model of fair remuneration for artists that takes into account the entire ecosystem that a voice goes through for a musical project, from creation to production to distribution. This is really complicated. There are academic papers out there that are trying to do this, and I'm not saying they're failing, but there's a real, there's a really big discrepancy, and Alexandra, you can also speak about that, about the work that academics are doing, trying to figure out those problems, and then the applications of it. Like, there are models and frameworks being made and proposed by academics presented at conferences. Oh, this would be great. This would be the way to solve it. And then it's 20 years later and the industry is like, oh yeah, by the way, we should really do this. And there's been examples in, especially in the radio and the broadcasting world, where we have new standards that are coming on from research side, and it takes like a decade to be accepted everywhere. So I think there's this kind of like catch-up game playing, where there are plenty of theories out there, but we'll actually only know which one is valid after it's been used in practice and selected by society, almost out of our control, right? Yeah, I don't.
Well, I'll probably just jump in with another example. So I recently worked with this American startup, it's called Kent AI, and they developed this bespoke operatic singing synthesis model. And I guess for lots of these new AI voice startups, they always have to ensure that the artists will still get paid, and they are not the intention of their technology is not to replace the voice of the artist. So the case of Kent AI is really that they position this as a tool to help with opera composers it's just a tool for them to better understand how it may sound in operatic settings during their compositional process, instead of having to have the whole work composed and then bring it to the studio to hire some opera singers and so on. So that's just one of the cases. But I guess in live performance settings, really, I think our voice synthesis technologies nowadays are still not good enough, both technically and also artistically. So technically, there's still this latency problem. So if you want to swap the voice, or you want to convert voice, you want to augment the voice, it's always a bit of a delay. And in live performance, we have no tolerance for any sort of delay, really. And for artistic reasons, I guess I just want to revisit the issue of how do we embody the voice in real time, because the integration of synthesized vocals with the whichever that is the digital avatar or maybe that's the hologram, whichever tool that we use to embody this voice. Because in live performance settings, the voice comes from the human being, and the question of the vocal source is paramount. It's very important that we see a human being capable of generating the voice in real time. If we were to replace human vocal production and give a synthesized voice, what's the use of a human on the stage? Is human reduced then only to an actor, a body? Another example that's been brought up quite a lot in this conference is the use of Hatsune Miku, which is a Japanese digital avatar. And the name of Hatsune Miku, it means the first sound from the future. And this digital avatar, they actually emerged quite early on in 2007 already. And later it rose to global fame. It went on tour with Lady Gaga and they even made an operatic debut in lots of global locations, like in the theater in Paris, and also made a debut in the Dutch National Opera and Ballet in 2016. So in Hatsune Miku's example, her voice definitely is not really realistic sounding, so you know the technology behind maybe it's not the most human sounding, as in most voice synthesis technologies has the goal of producing the voice that sounds so indistinguishable from the humans. But in Hatsune Miku's example, you can clearly hear the sound is not a human voice. It's a kind of digitally mediated voice. And also the digital avatar that's used to embody the voice is kind of this cute looking little cartoon animated character. Hatsune Miku was quite well received across the world, and as opposed to the two examples that I just brought up about Maria Callas and also the Japanese singer Hibari Misora, even though in Callas' example, the voice AI technology has been way more advanced than when Hatsune Miku made her operatic debut back in 2016. But Hatsune Miku was way better received than Maria Callas' example. So maybe that tells about something in this voice technology, that we don't want this AI-generated voice to sound entirely human. Maybe there's other things that we are expecting from the AI voice. So maybe you two can also comment on this issue about, so what is the highest goal of this technology? Is it hyper-realism, or is there something else, some artistic potentiality behind it?
I think it's funny because you're sat right in the middle, and we're probably on the either end of that, where you're going towards hyperrealism and I'm pushing in the other way. On the other side of the hyperrealism, on the electronic musician tinkerer side, where you just want to make something weird out of a tool that's out there. There's a value in this that goes, that doesn't have a price. You know, like if you go back to the question that you were asking, which was about the price and the remuneration, like how do you adequately pay for for part of a sample that you've recorded, etc. It's like it's a can of worm that goes beyond even the problems that we've been having with finding out the worth of sampling and distribution, etc. So I think this is potentially even more complicated and layered in terms of remuneration than when you go towards hyper-realism, where there's a clear attribution to someone who's contributed their voice. I don't know how you feel about it, but maybe, do you think it's more straightforward as, if you get a hyper-realistic voice to do, that chain of remuneration for the artist, or...?
I mean, look, when it comes down, and when we're talking about the attribution, let's say, for those blended voices and so on, my saying in this topic is where there is a will, there is a way. Okay. As simple as that, you know, you can definitely, there is a lot of research, there are a lot of tools coming out there. There are a lot of companies that now also they specialize in actually sorting out and training data sets for voice cloning purposes, be those, blended, also, so it's, I just think, you know, you can definitely achieve that, but prior to that, we just need to have like a general consensus, like where do we actually stand as an industry towards essentially with the AI, especially AI voice cloning technology. And yes, we personally, VoiceSwap, we asked, you know, we are interested in the highest quality, super realistic performance because we are targeting professional music making industry. We are not interested in just generating something that sounds crap. You know, that's what's the point of it? I think another question should be, which actually voice cloning technology we are talking about? Is it voice-to-voice conversion or text-to-speech? So voice-to-voice conversion at the moment, the challenge, because it's essentially you can swap the timbre, but the performance is left outside of that. While with text-to-speech, even we are working with voiceover talents and on some really famous actually characters where we achieved almost indistinguishable delivery and acting performance as well when it comes down to speaking. So I think it will only get better. It will only get faster. At the moment, yes, the challenge is with real-time conversion because you kind of sacrifice the quality and because we don't want to sacrifice the quality. And let's say, as you saw in the video, the conversion itself, because our infrastructure is cloud-based infrastructure, and then also we need to talk about the future where if this technology will be, you know, localized and should it be localized and, you know, different infrastructural requirements, essentially. As you saw in the video, it's to convert a voice, it's, you know, it's a split of a second. So it's almost imminent. You have this imminent, essentially, loop of conversion, getting feedback, understanding what works for you, using that. If it doesn't work, going to another voice, changing the pitch. I really love what users are doing and producers with actually, you know, like playing with pitch adjustments and voices and finding, you know, like new sounds over there. So
back to monetization. You're at the source. How much money can I make with VoiceSwap?
More than from streaming. More than from streaming, I can tell you that. So we have two monetization avenues. So first of all, it's very simple. We you know, like we didn't want to overcomplicate things. So each time, you know, a button is pressed to convert a voice, we actually pay upon inference. So we don't wait for the track to be released. It's about the usage of the words because we feel that that's only fair. So, and if we're, you know, if you want reference numbers, if we are comparing to royalties from streaming per minute, let's say, to what some of our artists are earning, so they're earning 14 pence per minute of the vocals used in there. It doesn't mean that they're earning 14 pence every single minute, but it's just in the minutes of an audio. So that is that. Then also we have, if a user wants to release the track, we have a buyout license. So the full track is sent to the singer, they listen to the track, they can through the platform accept or reject the track because it also sometimes it comes down to actually the taste of the music. And then depending on how long the vocal layer is in the track, there is a one-off license fee, and that is a featured buyout license, and it goes from £150 to I think the most expensive one is £500 license. So yes.
What do you think about control? We talked earlier about this. How can I protect my voice in the future? You, for example, have the model, if I'm right, that I can only publish something with another voice if they consent to it, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I cannot put it on Spotify just like that, but I really have to ask the artist, is this okay, right?
Yes. Well, first of all, in our terms and conditions, and kind of it's automatic. So if you subscribe, and it means, you know, and I fight hard against actually free use of AI models, and I do apologize to all of the producers. You know, like we do get a lot of actually emails. Oh, you know, like can we use this AI voice model for free? It's like, well, yes, you can if you release your music for free. That is my one condition. You know, if you have no value, if you add no value in your music production process, what, you know, like what sort of value are you generating, you know, at the end of it, and how are you monetizing that? So first of all, going back to the control, is all of our voice models are consented. And with the subscription, they can use all of the voice models, unless it is a session voice model, just for private purposes. And if they want a commercial or public release, then they must ask for consent. We are working, every single output contains also our custom high-frequency watermark, so then we can actually trace back to the user if it's needed. And we are looking also into, you know, more advanced tools for active detection and also attribution already within the music ecosystem and distribution, essentially.
Yeah. The question was about control, right?
Yes.
How can you protect your voice and be in control? I think yesterday there were quite a bit of things talked about trust. And because... you know, there's a machine in the way, but behind the machines, there are humans that make the machine, that implement the code, that build the repositories that we're using, that make it open source or don't make it open source, that decide to release their data sets or decide to not release their data sets. And all of this comes into this kind of trust network that you have to build to be confident enough to work with those platforms or, you know, develop something yourself. So even me and my particular, my lone little... AI research bubble. When I built this model of my voice, I did so with my previous lab, and I made it for a specific purpose. And about a year in, I get an email, a Slack message actually. This is where all the real work happens. I get a Slack notification like, hey, by the way, we're going to use your model with your voice in a workshop that I'm not attending or part of to ask like random 30 producers in a room to make music with it. Big moment of silence. I was on the other side of my screen like, I'm a singer. My voice is my own. I also make my own music. I don't want 30 random people to be using my voice. That's a personal choice. I'm sure some people are fine with it. Personally, I never signed up for that. And even though these people are my collaborators, I trust them implicitly. And obviously that was resolved via like two Slack messages. That wasn't like a big deal. But even in my super privileged position in this industry, I still came across that kind of like weird usage of something that I had made when I thought I was in control, because like on paper I was, but I guess actually I wasn't. So there's this myth of individual responsibility that's being like spread around, like we don't have the tools. I mean, like the reality is we don't have the tools right now to control completely something like that. Deepfakes happen, synthesized voice, a lack of consent, piracy, all of these things happen outside of our control. And I think it's kind of like, it's not deluded to think you can have control, but like, even if me in my privileged position was not able to maintain full control over something that was so certain that I had down, then I really struggle to see how a singer 180 in the corner who did their music education entirely in jazz studies and has never touched a computer can get that control. So I'm sorry if I have like a kind of a bleak outlook on this, but unfortunately I think right now we're really struggling with that trust economy, basically.
Yeah, and I was actually told that trust is the most expensive word out there. It can be very expensive if you base your relationship on trust. But this is where education comes into play. You have to, and I think now alongside, you know, like sound engineering, so you have to also have a curriculum around rights and usage of AI voice models within the existing production, essentially, processes. And for the same reason that even though we trust that every, you know, like that users, they will kind of, they have all the best intention in their hearts because they're creators and, you know, it's all for the sake of creativity. But we do recognize that there will always be rogue actors. And when there is also a conversation, I think we actually focus a lot when it comes down to bad actors, and I want to actually separate a rogue actor from a bad actor, because when we're talking about bad actors and the companies that we all know of and we continuously discuss about them and the misuse of the copyrighted data within, you know, like their models and so on, it's actually quite easy then to point a finger at those big companies, so because they're the source. But what about all of those random voice models that being, you know, like built there by just a guy or a girl, you know, in their bedrooms, and they're trying to monetize those models? And this was actually a question, and this was like a big debate when we wanted to release voice model training capabilities for any users. And by the way, those voice models are only used in private settings. So let's say if you wanted to build a voice model, so you build it, you upload the training data, it's built, and then it can only be accessed by people that you give access to, and you can remove the access. Our question was like, well, how do we actually make sure that people are not just not going STEM separating Taylor Swift, you know, Selena Gomez and so on, using their capellas from their tracks and creating, you know, Taylor Swift 1, 2, and creating this avalanche essential of those voice models, you know, infringing multiple rights alongside the way. So, and to be honest, we were not that inventive. We used existing technology. So we partnered up with BMAT. They already have a fingerprint database of 180 million, and they already track 30 billion movements a day across digital and, you know, live streaming platforms, essentially, because they collect for the collection sites and rights holders. So what we've done, we built an API where essentially the training data, when it's uploaded, it is cross-checked against their fingerprinting database, and if a copyrighted data is identified, then the training just simply doesn't happen. And the metadata that we receive is actually very accurate. We can see if the copyright checks fail, that the name of the artist, the title of the song, when commercial license was applied, and also who owns the rights. So we already have those tools. I think we just need to adopt them in this new, essentially, economy and industry.
We are almost at the end. Do you have questions? Then we have like 5 minutes. There's one, I think, or are you just tired? Okay.
I'm not tired at all. For me, this was the best panel talk of all. It's a dark side for me, what you all discuss. And you have a little Jesus style, I must say, for copyrights. May I ask the opinion of 11 Labs, probably you all know, what your thoughts about this engine?
I'll reply to this wearing my... I did some... A big portion of my research was on non-musical audio, specifically for broadcasting and podcasting, and I interviewed, like... I think I worked in a participatory design contest with context with like 50 different podcast producers, and asked them, like, how do you feel about voice synthesis, using examples like 11 Labs or Descript, etc. And the wide reaction was like, this is a problem for us, especially working in news and broadcasting. They were like, we don't know when the limit is editorially to changing and adding an S to someone speaking versus, you know, an entire voice being synthesized. So that's one of the reasons why I felt the need to completely not stop using this specifically, but like not include it in further research, because it seemed to be such a problem with the producers that I worked with. That's from my personal experience working with this specific industry. Maybe in music it's different. But yeah, the broadcasters and podcasters that I've worked with did not love this as a solution. And if your question was about technical specs?
To be honest, I already knew your answer, because me, I'm the guy you earn money with. I'm an audio producer and record a lot of voices, and I'm a composer, whatever. So technical-wise, I would not want to have your opinion, because you're a sister, you're really great. But I would love to hear the opinion.
Yeah, of course. Of
a really good answer, but I need people like you keep it real, and engines should not, you know what I mean? Like, take our talents and
you put. I don't know what you mean. Sorry, what?
Whatever. It's just like a thing of copyrights and cloning. For me, a big topic is cloning voices. I have to deal with agencies and companies, and they ask me more and more, and they are like billion companies like SAP, Procter & Gamble, and all that stuff.
My advice would be read their terms and conditions. Don't go easily into licensing deals before you actually understand the terms and conditions, where the training data ends up, because there is one thing of actually building standalone and individual voice models. Another thing is when it actually ends up in the base model, then it's lost. They are one of the pioneering companies in text-to-speech field. So yes, they've sprinted and they cut a lot of corners, and there are some consequences that they're facing right now. There are a few lawsuits actually by the voiceover talents and also authors that are happening right now. But I also do believe that also they're establishing some interesting practices, especially by working together with catalog owners for the licensing field. So it's kind of, they're normalizing now also the licensing space, I'd say. Yes, but don't read terms and conditions, please, for any tool.
Okay, maybe one or two questions we can answer. I think there were some. Yes.
Hey, thank you guys for this panel. It's been awesome. I'm curious to learn more about a bit on the technical side of what it takes to create a voice model. My understanding is that if you're training on just 30 minutes or even like, as you mentioned, like 15 minutes of usable voice data, you probably have some sort of like pre-trained component there. And I'm just curious to know, like, are the voice models you're creating, are you super fine tuning pre-trained models? And if so, are you guys creating those pre-trained models? Are you using open source ones? Like, where does the data for those come from?
So we have our own custom base model that is based on Solvit, but it has been highly customized, and every single training data point that has been used to train the base model has been specifically sourced and licensed for that purpose. We are very diligent about the quality. If you look actually at the rest of the team of VoiceSwap, you know, don't mind me as a failed wannabe musician, but the best shower singer ever, if there is a classification there. We have Dan Stein, professionally known as DJ Fresh. He's a multi-platinum, actually triple platinum music producer, record label owner, you know, artist in his own right. He is our CTO. He's been actually working in ML engineering for the last 8 years. So he's very knowledgeable about the music production, while also very knowledgeable about the ML side as well. The rest of the team also comes from audio production side. So we all strive for the quality. This is why curating training data is very important. This is why training data and licensing is such a hot topic, because if you want to advance your models, you really need very good training data. So this is why our base model is built for purpose. So when you upload 20 minutes of training data, and that's all you need to do, you will get a very good quality, studio quality, essentially, voice model.
Okay, maybe the last question, very short, then we are finished.
Okay, I'll try to be fast. What do you guys think about the impact on the wider music ecosystem? So the examples of hiring a famous likeness to do an audiobook, or a famous singer to do your backing singing, making a female version of yourself instead of paying a real woman. What's the impact, do you think, on up-and-coming artists, podcasters, opera singers? Yeah. To me, as a musician, I'm really emotional, as you can hear my voice, because I can see my life just melting away.
Now we have your voice.
To me, this is massively unethical. So, yeah.
I agree, basically. So the thing that I'm trying to share, and whenever I do these talks, I really want people to get away, like get out of with, is that I don't actually, I would only use these because I'm familiar with the tools and technology, and I train it on my own voice. It's something personal. I use open source open source models, and I augment my data, to answer the question before, to get to a point where it's like it's a quality that's okay but not great. And it's fine for me, but I don't see it as being an alternative or being something that would replace genuine human musical connection. And I think we all have a little part to play in how the world sees and views music and how we interact with the concept of what it is to be a musician and the value of music in the world. And every time that you're doing something and using a technology without you understanding it fully or without being in complete control or without knowing exactly what comes out of it, you're contributing to like a slow shift into something different. Again, this isn't like I'm not putting responsibility on the individuals. I think it goes way beyond that. I don't have a solution. I would like there to be more education, more training, more open source material out there, and for everything that's worth, more transparency from people who are making those tools, because that will make such a huge difference to how we feel and how we act.
Yep. Well, just to jump in for a very quick note, so I guess opera community is just very detached from the trends of the real world. So because of there's so much synthetic voice out there in all sorts of musical genres, but opera still remains its focus on the live performance arena. So in live performance, we already talk about currently it's still not really looking promising to replace human operatic singing with any sort of AI voice clones. So therefore, I think the ramification of that is that opera singers may even raise their price, given how much synthetic voice it is out there. Just to give you an idea, if I want to contract a very small scale opera production with a mid-career, let's say with 5-6 years of singing, and if I just want to give them a contract of working on my small scale opera production, then the fee the opera singer receives is something like 1.5 to 2,000 British pounds. So that's quite a lot compared to the fee that is received by musicians in other genres. So my observation is just opera is really going against the trends in the real world and also in the broader musical and creative ecosystem.
Thank you very much for all the insightful, for all your experience and for your time. If you want to listen to those beautiful voices again, follow the Tim Attack podcast. Thank you very much also at Music Frontiers.